3 years ago, when we were covering the London Boat Show at London's Excel Centre, we were privileged to meet a certain Richard Harpham, who was very keen to promote his inspiredlife.org with Olympians, the whole heap of folk. In the words of many folk who've taken part in the Inspired programmes, it helped me believe that I can become what I want to be, to inspire us and indeed share the magic from kayaks, canoes, through to a whole heap of other exciting things actually there. Well, we have Richard online at present. Richard, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well indeed.
Marvellous, fantastic. It's, you know, it's been too long since we last spoke, Richard, and I think that was when you were actually taking that Canadian challenge or going up the Yukon via a canoe. It was about a couple of years ago when you were sort of taking that trek in the north.
Yeah, well, that one was travelling from Alaska to the Yukon, yeah. And involved, it was a bit like a triathlon, really.
Yes.
It involved a bit of sea kayaking, hiking over something called the Chilkoot Trail, which is a historic route that all of the Gold Rush people took, and then I had a one-man raft. My brother and I were on this expedition, and we sort of inflated our rafts, and then they're called packer rafts, and paddled another 105 miles, which was basically like paddling a big jelly bathtub for 105 miles. It was pretty tough, to be honest.
And in so many ways, like one of these radio shows, how often, Holly, we've said it's just like paddling a big jelly bathtub, you know, 100 miles. You know, it's amazing.
Always. Yeah, exactly. Shall I go? It's just like paddling Contiki.
Well, there you go. Exactly.
that's a good reference, the Contiki
yes,
one.
Yes, we only have the very best co-presenters, Richard. You should know that, you know, from days of Natalie Tuckett and so on. Anyway, on to Emma. Emma Tinson, also in the studio. Emma Tinson and Holly Parker. InspiredLife.org, inspired by London 2012. Explore lives, be inspired. Emma, questions from yourself.
Well, first of all, it sounds very inspiring. I wanted to know, how did you get into this kind of sporty community reach thing? If that's what you can call it.
I mean, I guess a couple of things happened in terms of planets colliding. One was I was very fortunate to manage the Ghana ski team to the Winter Olympics, and that was what I would term an opportunity of a lifetime.
He was indeed the cool runnings man.
I was just going to say that. To address that, surely you have some weather difficulties with the Ghana?
Well, not when Richard Harper's concerned. No.
But, I mean, that was quite my story, really. From a country with no snow, learnt indoors in Milton Keynes, age 29. 6 years later, he qualified for the Winter Olympics. And because we were part of that global story, we basically thought, how do you pay this forward? How do you make a difference to other people? And that was the genesis or the idea for Inspired Life. And then my adventures really came about from one injury too many on the rugby pitch, and thought, you know what, I'm going to do something else. And away I went in a kayak, and then most recently on skis. So it's been all human power, basically.
Wow. So if your job is doing this, and you're constantly very active, what do you do on holiday?
Well, it's funny, actually, because my wife calls these holidays, so I have to regularly point out to her that, I mean, obviously it's my choice to do them, but that, you know, it's not everyone's idea of a holiday, but at the same time, it's getting people, you know, if I can do it, anyone can do it, really.
Over 20,298 young people have been reached out to by these transformational programs and so on. It does seem, I mean, the figures, and I mean, we knew when we spoke to you, actually, I think back in 2012, that you had some really good and ambitious ideas. But the seven programs are the Inspired Life Cycle, the Assemblies and Community Talks program. I mean, this is actually, again, you say paying it forward, but surely it's an essential part of the curriculum. I mean, we hear a great deal about the negativities that you get in Britain and British schools and so on. But isn't this sort of something where it's genuinely being put to life? By the way, I love the shot of the monkey on the elephant. I think that's wonderful. Explore lives, be inspired. By the by.
Yeah, I've got to say, anyone looking at the website, they'll perhaps get what you're talking about, otherwise they'll be a bit confused.
Inspired, inspiredlife.org. It wasn't just Alex Lefchuk going random again. It's okay.
I mean, I think the answer is that there's lots of good things going on in schools, lots of inspiring sort of lessons, but there's always been that gap between, you know, if you like, what's examined and what you need in terms of life skills. And that's the area that we spend a lot of our time focusing on. We use a lot of role models, as you said, Olympians, adventurers, artists, musicians, celebrity chefs, to sort of share their stories and to inspire. And I think we, to some degree, have the freedom of not being held by the curriculum. And, you know, that mix allows us to make it more experiential and in some cases more challenging. We obviously do fit and work alongside the curriculum. So it's a kind of blended approach, really.
Holly, you're having a little perusal of this. I know it's just the British Antarctic Survey running science, so GB athletes talking sport, taking sport, journalists, musicians, adventurers and zookeepers. Are you inspired by this?
It's not really my area of interest, yeah. Which is the problem, because I stick my nose in a good book, do you know what I mean? but at the same time... This seems very practical. It seems far too practical for someone who's
Richard, I think you almost dropped the phone there.
I think
the words,
it sounds really exciting.
Stick her nose into a good book, actually, sort of were mentioned. Over to you.
I think that's part of the, you know, what, you know, everyone has inspiration in different ways, and I think our life coaching stuff is about encouraging people to think of their whatever it is for them. So, to give you an example, we work with magazine editors, so they teach writing. We have some authors that we work with. Quite a lot of our adventurers write books. So it's really whatever your dream is, our job is to help support that. And that's what we've been doing for a period of time. It's, you know, it's so far so good.
So do you bring this around the country then?
Subject to people ringing us up and saying, hey, and that's either a school or a local authority, or in some cases we get the odd grant. Yes, we've worked in different areas, but it ultimately it comes down to you know, having funding to scale. So we've got a friend, one of our role models, who's been doing some stuff in Yorkshire. We are doing some stuff in London at the moment, Milton Keynes, and I guess we've, you know, the bulk of our stuff's been closer to home, where we live. I guess that makes sense.
Really makes perfect synchronicity to actually tie in with Lincoln Inspired, of course, doesn't it? Inspired on air, inspiring things. Emma, thoughts from yourself? I mean, we've had sort of global citizenship mentioned there.
Yeah, I think this sounds really interesting, because I think when I was at school and I was interested in all sorts of different things, like the schools obviously can't always support what you want to do as extracurricular. So I think this is really interesting, because obviously it's going to invite young people in to do things that they want to do in a fun way and not a pressurised way. It just helps them and then guides them into whatever they want to do in the future. So I think it sounds really exciting.
And I think that's part of the issue, is that, if you like, the pace of life and the way things are in this century are different to, you know, and the pace of change is so fast with technology and everything else that actually, you know, in some ways it's hard for the curriculum to keep up, whereas by our style of learning and teaching, that becomes a bit easier, I guess, is what we've found.
I do like the line, what does success look like? How many light bulb moments does it take to change yourself? These are significant points. You know, aspiration for, as we said, over 19,848 young people. That was back in November 3rd.
Well, it's actually, I was going to say, it's nearly 23,000
exactly,
now.
Exactly.
So there you go.
It just sounds wonderful. And again, we've been proud and privileged, actually, Richard, to be able to help in our own teeny tiny way to at least sort of raise the profile and awareness of this whole setup. Because, as you know, we were very keen to ensure that this message was there. Who would have thought it, that sort of little session when you were kayaking? Because next year, of course, at the London Boat Show, hopefully Emma will be making her little debut on the whole system.
Oh, there you go.
Hopefully.
Well, we're going to be up at the Scottish Canoe Show this weekend. Mm-hmm. So we're talking up in Perth. And looking at some sort of new adventures, possibly without letting too many cats out of the bag, maybe heading up and having a look at the Shetland Isles. So lots of different adventures, and back to the Yukon for a 500-mile ski trip. So stay tuned.
Nothing like the 500-mile ski trip, actually get this all sorted. I think that's the system. Yeah, very much.
Clear the head.
I like the raising aspirations to become a forensic scientist and fence in the Olympics. That's, you know.
See, is that what someone's written down before?
Raising aspirations.
Those are two two ambitions that go hand in hand quite often.
Exactly. That's the key thing from that. Yeah, building emotional. Richard, it's been fantastic. Very routine. I mean, I'll do a little quote here from some of the school staff that have actually taken part. I'll give them a name chat as well. Deborah Pargita, head. Thank you so much for last week. Children were totally inspired by you. Anything else you think you can offer us? A resounding yes, please. So great stuff there. And Wareham, up ahead of you, upper school, students related to the concept that your future doesn't have to follow what you've done in the past. And that, again, is the key system. I think, Richard, we've talked about this before, that ultimately you do not have to be defined by your past. You need to actually look to the future.
Well, I think that's, you know, my experience of one Olympics, becoming an adventurer, having a proper job before that, which is now safely behind me. Yeah. You know, it's whatever you want to do. So, you know, I guess that's the thing. Hopefully people can be inspired and then explore their own ideas.
That's pretty much it. Emma, would you like to ask the inspirational question to Richard Harpham? Two of them, of course, in tandem. Off you go.
Of course. Mm. Have you enjoyed your time on the show today?
Absolutely. I mean, it's just great being able to connect, and hopefully, you know, people can find their own ways to explore different ideas. And I think in my world of adventure, what I say is the best adventure is the one you take. So, you know, if people feel inspired and maybe to look at other people that have done cool things, then, you know, get out there and try some things.
And not necessarily,
you don't know until you've tried it.
Cool things such as the Winter Olympics. I do like that. Sorry. By the way, I mean, having seen, presumably you've seen the movie Cool Runnings, Richard.
Yes.
Was it an accurate representation of your kind of agonies and stresses and challenges that you went through when they sort of said, we'd like you to actually coach this team from a very hot country and get them into the Winter Olympics?
Well, I'd like to, which I often end up doing, saying I was the manager, not the coach. So if it had been left to me to coach, they wouldn't have made it, I don't think. But I was quite a good manager. So, I mean, yes, it was pretty incredible getting on a plane to head off to Vancouver without anywhere to stay and all sorts of other things. The end of the story obviously turned out well, and Kwame's trying to build a ski slope in Africa, so watch this space.
A ski slope in Africa, that's some heck of an impact for climate change, but never mind. Inspiredlife.org, of course, is the go-to place, but I must not digress even further because the second question has not been asked.
Yes, the
Emma.
Second question. Will you be joining us on the show anytime soon?
Hopefully so. Why don't you, you know, you guys arrange a time and I'll sort of tell you more about other things.
Fantastic.
I think finding out about Richard Harpham's other things.
Other things.
Exactly. Other things. Cabbages and kings, other things. Speak of various. And Holly, we'll get. I mean, books are very nice, but sometimes you need to just peek out and see the world that's out there.
To be fair, talking to Spot, I used to do archery, and I'm looking about getting back into it.
I'm going to say, if you get me back on, I'll talk about my reading list. How's that?
Well,
you know, I'm sold.
It's Richard Harpham, founder, of course, behind the fantastic inspiredlife.org. You can go on the website, obviously, find all sorts of other bits and pieces there. Actually, Richard, do you have Facebook?
People can also have a look at richadventure.com, which is my new adventure website.
There we are, richadventure.com.
And they can get to social media from there. Thanks very much.
It's just wonderful. Richard Halpern, we salute you. It's Lenny Kravitz now, The Chamber on Siren 107.3 FM. After this, it'll be, amazingly enough, news time. Blended. There's something wonderful about having a sports reporter called Chelsea, isn't there? You know, maybe we could have somebody who actually does weather called Newcastle United. But never mind, it's a lie. It works very well. Well done. Now, waiting patiently in the background, just tuned in for that and sort of keen to see where he's going to go, because he's returning to the show after a bit of a gap. Not too long a gap, but still a gap, because obviously we had Scottish independence, we had the vote for Scottish independence, we weren't sure in terms of whether haggis would cross the border, whether it would, whether it wouldn't. It's Peter Kerr. How are you, Peter?
I'm fine, thanks, Alex. How's yourself?
Oh, splendid. And I gather you've been listening online to the production.
I have, yeah. It's been wall-to-wall tonight. Great reception.
Yeah, wall-to-wall. In fact, actually, one of our team seems to be standing up on a ladder. I thought, don't do it, it's not worth it, really. Still, never mind. That's JP Dickey for you, standing outside the studio. God knows what he's doing. Still, I'm sure he does, or she. Anyway, Peter, let's just sort of move into introductions, because obviously you've heard the delightful sound of Holly and Emma, our midweek drivettes in the whole system.
Yeah, they sounded good.
They are sounding
Thank
good.
You, so are you.
Sounding good, which is great. Can we talk about the? I mean, you know, in terms of independence, did you think it was going to happen? Did you think that we would need passports to cross over the border and we'd have to totally reassess our kind of relationship across the sort of boundaries, really?
Well, you know, I was asked that very question by a paper in Mallorca the day before, and I told them what I really thought, and I didn't think that there was going to be any yes vote. For Scottish independence, it was close, and you know, there's different ways of looking at it. I haven't got too excited either way, and I wouldn't have been too excited either way, whichever way it went. But I don't think, you know, people talking about the breakup of the United Kingdom. No, that wouldn't have happened. It's still going to have the same Queen. It was a political thing, and you know, I had a sort of hunch it would actually be good for England as well. Because if you've got Scottish independence, that means
the Yorkshire people would be going for it, you know. Surrey might even say it's time
we went
for South Road.
Yeah, I mean, I've probably opened a can of worms here, but just think about it.
Short answer, Holly, no, I don't think so.
You know, think Yorkshire's
bigger than Scotland?
It's the biggest county.
Biggest county.
Scotland's a country. Enough. Yeah.
You see what we've started, Peter.
Got more people.
Listen, I think we're going to have to...
Start the fight in the studio.
Exactly. But we're not going to let that sort of take us off. Now, I was originally going to feature a wonderful tune called Caravelle by a certain Peter Kerr. We did obviously mention in the first part of the programme your connection with the Crankies, but I thought that's too much of a shock factor at this particular time of day. And instead, you also sent us a wonderful jazzed-up version, of course, the classic Prokofiev, Peter and the Wolf.
Yeah.
I mean, we've just been looking at Countryside Live and the fun times, well, at least one of us had there on Saturday. To be fair, you know, Ed Wellman came along as well.
It wasn't my fault.
No, of course, this needs to be made quite public. It was not.
And I was woken up at 1:30. I had an early night in preparation,
exactly,
and then I was woken up in the middle of the night.
You can't go. Oh, thank you very much. That's very nice. Genius. In case, by the way, you're wondering what's happened to Jessica Ward, last from New Zealand, now living in the Isle of Man, she's basketballing.
No, netball.
Oh, netball.
There's a difference.
This obviously explains so much. There was I expecting Jessica Ward, JW, to be the Harlem Globetrotter, doing all the things, all that skill. It's netball. No, never mind. So it goes. Anyway, Peter, would you like us to just break into Peter and the Wolf?
It's
a nice toe-tapping sort of number, which in many ways kind of, you know, takes over the little Michelle Monroe slot here. Michelle will be back, of course, with us next week.
Oh, yeah, of course, I remember Michelle, yeah.
And she remembers your good self, of course, Peter, which is very good. And I do like the line that, of course, just as the sports team have a sports reporter called Chelsea, you, of course, have actually gone for Peter and the Wolf with respect to Peter Kerr. So it was great. Right, are we ready, folks?
Very ready.
Yeah.
Here it comes. I can see that being worked into the soundtrack of Murder, Mayhem, Felony and Farce, the bywords, as Bob Burns and his two sidekicks become enmeshed in a complicated web of international intrigue and Caledonian skullduggery. The Sporn Connection, Bob Burns investigates. investigates.
I see you, Alex, jiving about there in the studio with Holly and Emma, right?
Yeah, we would have had the webcam on, but obviously decided not. But yeah, I think it was a little hand jive there, bit of jazz hands.
Jazz hands, always.
Yeah. Always prepared. So just share with us the story of how you came up with that jazzed up version of Peter and the Wolf.
Well, that was in 1962, and I was in London with a band called the Clyde Valley Stompers, who were from Glasgow, although I am not. And we had just signed a recording contract with Parlophone, EMI Parlophone, through George Martin, who wasn't known for anything much outside people like, well, I think Bernard Cribbins and Peter Sellers and these sort of comedy guys. But anyway, he signed us up, and he didn't have any material in mind. And our piano player, Bert Murray, came up with that idea of Peter and the Wolf, and we got together. We stayed in Finchley in London at the time. We got together one afternoon, knocked some ideas about, arranged it, and a couple of days later went into Abbey Road and recorded it. That was Abbey Road, of course, before it became extremely famous
But Peter, in terms of actually being there as a precursor, you helped give it the fame that we know Abbey Road as having today. See, this is the crucial point. I mean, one of the things in a little module called Origins of Modern Britain, we've just been talking about the angry young men, the likes of the Look Back in Anger system and that whole area. And again, jazz was very much the fore there. But did you not think it was frightfully American, Peter? Did you not think, you know, what are we doing with these American stuff, you know, infecting our British culture?
I suppose that's what we did, though. You see, we were jazz nuts. I mean, I started playing jazz when I was about 18, 19 or something. But that was in the late 50s, and that's what we did. We used to just about eat American jazz records because that's obviously where the music came from. And then when we started to play it ourselves and do it for a living on the road all the time, then. Well, you know, these commercial records like Peter and the Wolf, they were made to actually sell to the general public because, like the pop buying public, because jazz was at that time, in the late 50s, early 60s, very much part of the pop culture in Britain. Didn't last long, mind you. But that's what we did. We would try and use that American style to jazz up unlikely stuff that might have commercial appeal over here.
So there we are, you see. And I can guarantee that the words jazz and American will be appearing in a seminar sometime at the University of Lincoln.
I'm going to use that, everything you just said.
Exactly. It's critical in every sense of the word. Peter, we haven't had a chance to really get into Thistle Soup, to get into the Mallorca connection, all Snowball Oranges and so on, The Gannet Has Landed, and of course the fantastic latest scenario, Song of the Eight Winds, which is an absolutely outstanding text. Indeed, a new edition has been revealed this September. You know, it just shows how long we've actually worked with that basic. It's 1229, the year of the Christian reconquest of Mallorca from the Moors. A Muslim people of Afro-Arabic origin who have ruled Spain in cultural splendour for 500 years. Heading the Christian invasion is King James I. The dashing 21-year-old ruler of the northern Spanish kingdom of Aragon, who sets out for Mallorca with a mighty armada of 150 ships carrying some 15,000 foot soldiers and 1,500 cavalry. I'm not going to say any more because it's an outstanding read.
It sounds epic.
It is. Actually, that's exactly the phrase I would use to describe it, Emma. And I shall try and locate where my copy is and pass it on to you. I'm sorry, Peter. I've temporarily mislaid it. I don't know where it's gone, but it's there somewhere.
No, anyway. That's a great plug. Thanks for that, Alex. You should have read the whole book. Yeah, that's a nice one.
it's important. Don't get any spoilers away, but it is a genuinely epic tale. And I'll quote from the historical novel review. History comes to life through Kerr's skill as a storyteller. Peter Kerr's best book to date. The excitement builds from the very start. And indeed, Peter's knowledge and love of this beautiful island flows from every page. It's another story for another time. Holly, would you like to bowl those last two interrogatives down the way to the Cranky's main music man?
I'd love to
mention that. It is Peter Kerr. Go, Holly.
Have you had fun talking to us today, Peter?
It's been great fun as ever, Holly. Yeah, thanks very much.
And will we get to talk to you again soon?
I hope so. All you got to do is give me a buzz. I'm here.
I think we'll be featuring Peter Kerr before too long. I still do some book sharing and various other things. Although, it has to be said, Holly's still working her way through. Oh, have you finished the book?
I finished it. I devoured it, and it only took me like a day. Once I started reading Mr. Toobar, it was really, really good.
Yeah, do you see? That's it. You know, it's and how's your reading coming on?
I'm not going to lie. No. I haven't started. But I will get there.
Exactly. That's it. Just dive in. That's the important thing. Meanwhile, you can, of course, go to the website peter-kerr.co.uk. I just type in Peter Kerr, K-E-R-R, as in Bobby Kerr, former Sunderland footballer, and you'll find the whole range of things. No relation, I believe, Peter, to the man who actually lifted the FA Cup for Sunderland in 1973.
That's right, no relation.
No relation. Oh,
shame.
It's probably shame for Bobby, actually. I think he's running a pub in Wearside somewhere, so I believe. So, life continues. Up next, Ilana Rain from New York.